There are a world of ways to PayPal. With just my email address and password, I could be checking out at one of millions of stores online. Or managing my Pay in 3 payments on the go. I can pay for that much-needed yoga class. Or get paid back for that even more needed pizza. And I can even support my favorite charities, all in one place. With more ways to shop, pay, donate, and send money, there are more ways to PayPal. Discover more at paypal.com/UK. You must have a PayPal account to send and receive money. Over 18s only.
Hi everyone, welcome to another episode of the Dope Black Woman podcast. I'm Leanne Levers, one of the co-founders of Dope Black Woman, and today we have two very special guests. Welcome both of you, Henry and Peter. I'm going to allow you to introduce yourselves and welcome to the podcast. Thank you so much for joining me to be put in the hot seat and answer all these questions from our Dope Black Woman community.
Thank you. Thank you very much.
So
I don't think I had a choice. Like, you make it seem like I chose to be here. Like, you strong-armed me.
Yes, that is very true. So I'm gonna say that I have known Henry for a very long time, although I'll let him introduce himself, but he is one of our nearest and dearest and a very big ally to the Dope Black Woman community. Many of the pictures that you'll see of Roshan and I, Henry took or has taken. And he is constantly getting requests from me to do a very quick turnaround time with editing the podcast from time to time when we're in a bind. So thanks for joining us, Henry. And I appreciate all of your support and friendship to the Dope Black Woman community.
You're most welcome, of course, anytime. And I don't think there's any much to say about me. I'm Henry Robinson, and everything what Leanne just said.
We're going to get into that in a second. And also, I'm going to welcome Peter, who I'm just meeting for the first time today, but seems like a lovely individual. And he is friends, very close friends with Roshan. And Roshan gave me the opportunity to meet him, and he has agreed to join us today. So thank you, Peter, for joining us. Feel free to introduce yourself. Tell us a little bit about who you are.
Well, my name is Peter, as you know. I'm a pastor in training, but my professional job is I'm an entrepreneur. I specialize in sales. As you said, very close friends with Roshan. Our friendship sort of started when we met many years ago in a retail store she worked in. And from that day forth, we kind of grew, connected, and we've made it to this point. So that's me.
Thank you. I didn't know you were a pastor in training, actually. That's interesting. So we have two very diverse opinions and backgrounds to answer these questions. And Henry, well, let me say that the reason that I wanted to do this episode is because, as I was saying to Peter earlier, many of us as human beings hate unsolicited advice. Maybe women more particularly than anyone else. I certainly hate unsolicited advice. And this is an opportunity for women to ask questions and for us to invite the opinions of men, of Black men from the continent and from the Caribbean and from the diaspora to answer their questions anonymously. So what we did was we asked our Dope Black Woman community to submit questions, which I have a few of them here. And we have involved Henry and Peter to answer some of these questions for us. So what I will do actually before we get started on the questions is one of the things that we always ask anyone who comes on the podcast is what makes you a dope Black person? Henry's shaking his head because he's heard this question asked many times before. So I'm gonna ask Peter to go first. Peter, what makes you a dope Black man?
Wow. I'm already on the spot. I like to consider myself as someone that's very reserved and humble, so it's just difficult to answer this question without trying to sound arrogant or over cocky or confident. But I would say what makes me a dope Black man is my journey and the trials that I've endured and made it to this point, knowing others who've gone through the same stage and have died or they're incarcerated. So for me, that's what makes me dope, that I survived.
Wow, okay. That's a great answer. And hopefully through the questions, we'll talk a little bit more about what your journey was and how you kind of worked through it. Henry, you're gonna answer this question as well. Don't think that you will escape it. And the reason, both of you are so bashful and like humble individuals, clearly. The reason that we ask this question is because this is an opportunity for you to celebrate who you are, celebrate how amazing you are, without it being self-indulgent or without it being boastful. It's just being honest and just talking about, you're just gassing yourself for a hot minute. So just, Henry, gas yourself for a second.
No, that will never happen.
That's right, that's right.
I mean, all right, so not to try and even give similarities to what Peter just said. I think for me, it is the balance between living in what is called, for two categories, what is called a first world or a developing country, and then not also that, but like what is a predominantly white country and what is predominantly a black country. And trying to like not just live, but to try and excel in both.
You know? Amazing. That's a very good point. That could be a whole podcast episode all to itself, actually. Thank you for that, for future reference. So Henry, you are Jamaican, correct?
Yes, I am.
Yes, but have spent a lot of time in the UK.
I just added it recently. I think it's a decade now.
Like, wow.
10, 11 years.
And Peter, you are of Ghanaian descent.
Yeah.
And you're married to a Trinidadian.
Yeah, that's correct.
So this is nice. We have a nice mix of cultures taking place. And hopefully that will be reflected in the questions, because many of the women were interested in answering or having these questions answered by men on the continent, but also men in the diaspora. Okay, so let's get into something very simple, which might be applicable to both of you. I'm not sure. How nervous are you about your hairline receding?
Oh, well, I mean, obviously this is a podcast, but I'm actually seeing Peter, and Peter has a bald head. So, I mean, yeah. You know what, let me tell you, and it's the same thing that is with Peter now. Reason I don't really have too much of a problem is because I have a beard, and I feel like, mm-hmm. you know, if you have a beard, a full, you know, full-fledged beard, then it don't matter. You just rock the bald head and you're good. But for somebody who has had dreads for some time, and I'm regrowing my second dreads now, it would be a bit of a sting, but at the same time, you know,
you'd rock.
I've already done it. Yeah, I have pictures of me with dreads or whatever, whatnot. So I can look back and said, yeah, remember the days. But for me, it's not that big of a deal.
So yeah. I mean, it's an interesting question, and Peter, maybe you can talk a little bit about your hair journey, because I don't know how important aesthetics are to men. Like, obviously, women. Most women make it a point to get their eyebrows done. You know, I'm deep conditioning my hair while we're talking today. And you know, we some of us do, you know, wear makeup, and aesthetics is somewhat important. And because I guess men place a certain, the perception is that men place a certain emphasis on the aesthetic of women. And so how does that work for you as for yourselves? Do you care about your own personal aesthetic? Do you worry about your hair journey or anything else?
Being honest, I used to carry a lot of vanity, being quite frank about my hair, because I had all the waves, and it used to be definitely a topic of discussion because back then it wasn't very common as it is now. So it used to always be a topic of a discussion. It definitely used to be a way that I used to feel confident in speaking with women because it was common on my hair texture, especially when they found out that I was African. I always get told I'm mixed, and you know, that was never obviously the case. But when my hairline started just chipping away, it got to a point where the reality of it was, you know, you are about to become very vulnerable and you no longer have this thing to depend on. Mm. And like Henry said, at that point, I said, the beard has to come. The beard needs to, you know, I need to start growing my beard. I need to make this work in some kind of way. And yeah, man, I would say losing my hair in the sense of, I choose to cut it. It can grow, but the way the hairline is positioned is just not, you know.
It's just not hairlining.
It's not hair. Exactly. Thank you. You know, it's just not. It's not connecting. You know. So, yeah. But yeah, I just, to be fair, I personally would say men do care about their appearance. Obviously, not as much as women, but men do care about the way they look. And the way that they carry themselves and present themselves. But I feel like that does come at an older age. When you're younger, you kind of just, you do care, but you just sort of flick on your clothes and just cut out the house and do what you're doing. But as you get older, you start realizing the importance of, you know, manicures and making sure your nails are clean. And when you're younger, girls ain't watching that. But when you get older, they're watching, are your nails clean? Do you keep your hair fresh? Do you do these things? So I would say, yeah, for me now, I take a lot of pride in my appearance because I strongly believe that you only get one chance to make a first impression. And two, to answer your question, my hairline receding was a problem, but then I had to find a way to accept what was happening and just allow the journey to be what it is. And yeah.
It's interesting. Go ahead.
I can add to that.
Yeah.
Right, so, I mean, right, so we are different, but I guess we all get to the same point. So like for me, my hair, like, you know, when I was going to school or whatever, whatnot, my hairline wasn't like a big thing for me because like I grew up in a household, like my mother raised me and how I was, you know, how she, you know, when your mother carried you to the barber, I could never get a like line up, shape up in the front. And her analogy, and even just like my aunt's analogy in it, was that we were training our hair to recede by doing that. Mm-hmm. So we never actually got line up at the front.
Okay.
Right. So that's what our parents taught us. And because of that, I kind of like, once I got to an age where I was able to control how I cut my hair, I kind of stick to that still, right? I kind of stick to that. And my hair, I didn't know what my hair could do because like in Jamaica, like you're just, you know, I was just a person who followed the rule and just like keeping it low. It wasn't until I left high school and I started growing up my hair, I started realizing how my hair looked, you know? Just like you, people would say I was mixed because my hair was curly and whatever, whatnot, and I'd twist my hair and then pull out my hair and then it would just look this way, you know, all these kinds of things. And it was still nice, but I guess I went through another journey. By the time I guess I got too vain in that sense, I started thinking of locking my hair. So I'd locked my hair for a whole time and then I cut it. And I'd said definitely when I cut my hair a couple of years ago, about 5 years ago, I had dreads almost like to my bottom basically, and I cut it off. Wow. And it's when I cut it off now, I start realizing, oh, yo, my hair, like, I got this hair where girls look crazy.
Yeah.
And for a minute, it was nice. It was cool. But I just felt like it was just, I miss my dreads. And, you know, I wanted to grow back some new dreads and like different types. So like for me, I get it with guys who always had that wave thing going on. I mean, I could have had it, but I was never in that game. Mm-hmm. But what I will say is that, yeah, of course, we definitely try to look as presentable. Because I remember the first time I grew my dreads, like when I first started, I made sure it was like done all the time.
Well coiffed.
Yeah, you know, even like slicking back the hair at the front and all of these things. But for me, no, I feel like the care that I take in my hair, and not just my hair, but myself, is more on a health basis than a good look
basis.
It's like trying to know, make sure at least, you know, it is healthy. And yeah, of course, you still want to look good, but you've added what makes, what can maintain something and not just like present.
Fair enough. That's an interesting point, actually. I never really thought about how much or how little men care about their appearances. You know, and I think about a friend of mine who is going bald now. His hairline is receding and he's holding on for dear life. Like, he's trying the rope in. He's getting like the black shoe polish and filling in the spaces. Yeah.
It's going, let it go.
You just have to let it go. Okay, that's the advice that you're giving. Let it go and grow a beard.
If you can.
If you can. Boy, if you can't, boy. Rough out here in these streets. Okay, so let's get into some dating questions, because I feel like there are some really good dating questions in here. Mm. What is your criteria for settling down? So interestingly enough, both of you have been in committed relationships at some point in time. You're both old enough to have said that you've been in long-term relationships. And what's the distinction between meeting somebody and knowing that you're going to just like hook up with them and it's going to be something casual versus actually settling down with this person and being like, okay, I'm gonna see where this goes in an official capacity?
I'm gonna let you answer this, Henry. I want to hear your perspective.
I was hoping you would start. I'll tell you why I wanted you to start is because I know, not to say that I don't have or I didn't have that thing where, you know, when you're just young, wild and free, and there was no real intent, even though maybe the other person had intent. I would be honest with you, I most likely went into it with an open mind, not knowing what would happen, if this was going to last, but, you know, okay, if this was going to be like, you know, a fling or one night, or like a committed thing. I'll be honest with you, like, for most of it, I would definitely say that is how I entered it.
So at what point in time in the relationship do you recognize that it's something serious?
I mean, so literally when I started realizing that I was genuinely interested in what can happen between me and the person, like growing wise, like what is the potential of, and I would say, when you talk about like building a life that probably didn't start happening till my relationship, seriously, like, and we're talking like, not like when I was in my early 20s and I was just like, yeah, oh my God. No, that like, when I'm talking about serious, like remove the love, infatuation, remove all of that. Like, let's logically look at this and say, like, can I build something with this person? I think genuinely that started in the relationship before the one that I'm in. So especially when I got into this one, I will be honest and say, yo, that is predominantly what I was looking at, because I was just like, and how I looked at it was, I've been in other relationships where it was just like really, really interested in, you know, loving that person or whatever, or whatnot, or whatever the case may be, how people want to describe it. And it never worked. Like, you know, we broke up, you know? So I'm not going to enter this one the same way. Like, I have to start looking at it from a different aspect. And I am getting older, I have to look at that. And, you know, like, you know, in my early 20s, I was thinking I was still a kid. I mean, I still think I'm a kid now. So I wasn't thinking of like having kids. You know, even though some people around me were having kids, I was just like, I wasn't interested. But now I genuinely, like, I don't know, like, I start realizing that I'm an adult, and I only realize that when I see kids talking to me a certain way, right? And it started making me realize, and me talking to them a certain way as well. Like I was giving advice to my friend's child, who is like, she had the child early. And I just realized I was giving him advice And I realized I was giving him advice just like how my uncles were giving me advice. And I was just like, oh crap, like I'm at that point now where, yeah, I'm talking to people like my uncles used to talk to me.
Well, that's interesting. So age definitely plays a factor, or maturity, I guess you would say.
Yeah, 100%.
And it's interesting, and Peter, I don't know if you feel this way, but my partner, who is much older than me now, he's in his early 50s.
Much older than you now, so there's going to be a point where he's not much older than you.
My current partner, who is in his early 50s, and obviously I'm in my late 30s, he said that when he met me, he knew immediately that he wanted to date me. Like, he was like, and he was going to date me seriously. And I think part of that, and he would probably say that part of that was very much rooted in, you get to an age where you're like, yeah, it's time. These are the things that I'm genuinely looking for. Is that, do you feel the same way?
I 100% agree. I'm 34 at the moment, and I would sit there and say, I've always been after a serious relationship. And that's only because of what I saw my mother go through, if I can be transparent. The yearning for the companion, the yearning for the person that would be beside you through the, you know, the difficult times and the bills and all that sort of stuff. And when I saw that, I realized the importance of trying to find that special one. My mum thought she found a special one, but it turned out to be a not a very good man. So for me, when I started dating, it was always to find the serious one. But what I kept on stumbling upon was the ones that just kind of wanted to have a bit of fun. So after a while of dating, when I say I started from the age of like 15, 16, as I reached about 18, 19, I said to myself, you know, there's no point of looking for the one. I may as well just now start just enjoying myself, because that's what these women seem to be after. They want the commitment. Well, the women that I met was, they want the commitment, but without the seriousness. So they want to know that I'm there, but they don't want to take it to that next level of really being there. So we're invested, as Henry said, like really into each other. So that happened for a while, and I accepted it. I said to myself, you know what? If I get to a certain age when I'm ready to marry, I'm just going to find that woman that's okay with what we have, and she gets the routine, and then we'll just have our kids, and then we'll just see how life turns out. But fortunately, I met my wife now, and just as your partner, I knew from the first sort of week of conversation that, wait a minute, this could be the one. You know, this could be the one that I can really build something with. And even though my mind was still telling me, nah, just have your fun. And then, yeah, from there forth, we talked, et cetera, et cetera. Time went on. We got married in our fourth year of seeing each other due to a few little issues and problems that arise in relationships, a few kinks that you got to sort of work out in yourself, because, again, we moved in 6 months after dating. So we lived together quite early. And because of that, it caused us to see a lot of things prematurely about each other. It caused us to identify certain things that normally you would have had more time to prepare yourself for. When we jumped into it, those few little kinks, but I knew what I want. I always wanted something serious, but due to the society or community or whatever, I sort of thought, you know, let me just go with the flow to be fair, I didn't think there would be an until I met my wife.
Interesting. I just want to say that, Peter, you are 34.
Yes, please.
And Henry, you are
35.
Ladies, the beard is a trick, because these men are out here looking grown as fuck, and it is a lie. It's a lie.
They never tell you, like, the beard is like the male's makeup, like this is what
we're, man.
So I'm realizing.
Yeah, man. especially now I have like one and two gray hairs, like, oh, it made me look like wise and elderly, you know? Yeah.
Yeah, man.
Yeah, but sometimes it make me feel bad because when I got like, I in my community, some kids were like giving trouble. I bend the corner and one of the kids saw me, and like they were playing and they're looking at me, you know, like, oh no, we're just playing, sir. Like, we're not like causing trouble. And I was just like, sir. I'm like, sir.
Yeah.
Sir. Sir. Like, it's funny, just like you, pass me the ball.
it's funny you said it because I went into the local supermarket in our area, and I found that a lot of these older women were giving me attention. Not saying that I was looking for that attention, but I found that a lot of older women were, you know, smiling and showing me a lot of love and attention. Mm. I thought to myself, when did I reach that stage? I thought I was still, you know,
I do you one better. So when I first came here, I was like 18, 19, right? 18, 19, I came here and, you know, I would go to Brixton a lot. And at the time, this is Brixton before gentrification. And, you know, you would have like right at the police, right at the station as you get up, you'd have like these like police there and they would give you like random search at times. Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. And one or two times, and like where I used to live as well, like police would be there and they'll be like eyeing you down or so. And I was never a lawbreaker, like law abider. Like my family definitely would kill me before the police even have anything to do. Right. Anyways, you know, and I remember just like police giving me attention because obviously young black man wave and whatnot. When I realized I got older was when I just came back here. I went to Notting Hill Carnival. And what police was that this there's this like era place in Notting Hill. What they were doing is because the place is so crowded, by the time you reach around the corner, you don't realize there's like a bag of police and there's very little way you can turn back around. So you're kind of like wedged in and you just have to go through them. And what they were doing was just picking out people, right? And yeah, they might pick out a lot of the black boys and thing and whatnot. So I'm like, oh crap, they might go pick me. Reach where the police can pick you out, and the police like, oh, go through, sir. And I'm like,
old man.
Right?
You know what?
I was like, I can get trouble too. I can have a strap on me. I can be shanking these people. Like, it's like, no,
it's crazy. It's changed. It's like, I remember the day, like you said, I was guaranteed. I'll get stopped. Guaranteed. Now, nobody minds me, and I'm sweet to nothing. Because
you're harmless and old.
Yeah. But do you know what? It is a nice feeling. It's a nice feeling, but it's still a form of discrimination, in my opinion. Even though some people say, it's okay because obviously they're not troubling you," but it just goes to show that the police have their eyes fixated on a certain specific group.
Yeah. Because
stops me from doing something? What stops me from, you know, flexing in a certain way? So, yeah, it does. Yeah, the beard does shift the game to an extent. It does shift things a bit. Yeah,
that's interesting. That's very interesting. Dominic has just joined us. Hi, Dominic.
Hi, Leah, and hi, Henry. Hi, Peter. How you doing?
I'm fine, thank you.
Yeah, good. Not too bad. Sorry for being late.
No, thank you for joining us. So I just want to also welcome Dominic, who is joining us. Dominic is a friend of mine, and we met through mutual friends. He's actually also friends with Henry, and he is of Jamaican background, but also has spent a lot of time in the UK. So Dominic, just introduce yourself, tell us who you are, and then we ask all of our guests who come on the podcast, what makes you a dope back person? So tell us who you are and tell us what makes you a dope black man.
Yeah, okay. Well, hi, everyone. So my name is Dominic Hay. My background, as Leah mentioned, is I'm born British, but I grew up in Jamaica. So moved to Jamaica when I was about 7 years old. Pretty much my foundation years were spent in Jamaica. So primary school, secondary school, college, most of my time was in Jamaica. And I came back to the UK 2007 to pursue higher education, did a law degree, and then now I'm basically a practicing managing consultant. So I work in management consultancy, advising central government companies and bodies on their contracts and commercial management strategy. So I'm a consultant, so that's what I do for day to day. Other than that, I'm an entrepreneur as well. So I've got a marketing business which does management of Facebook ads for SMEs, brands as well. And I'm also invested in the property sector as well. So a little bit about me. I mean, from a career perspective, consultant, investor, entrepreneur, and in terms of me as a dope black person, that's a good question. I never actually had to think of why am I a dope black person. I think a lot of it is just to do with being able to know how to navigate and network in the UK, and how to use my own skills to get to where I want to get to and deal with challenges that are presented to you in the UK. As a young black millennial in this country, it is not always the easiest to know how to make certain judgment calls in certain corporate environments, and how to basically grow and grow your career essentially, and while doing so, trying to help others as well. So over the last few months, for example, I've spent a lot of my time helping people who have a similar background to mine, whether that be in law or business, I'm helping them get career opportunities in the legal space. And I've actually helped someone at the moment recently become a consultant. So that's been really a good achievement for me, because now where I'm at in my career, I'm able to allow people to help me on a project, or tell them, why don't you set up your own company and invoice me, and I can subcontract work to you. So at the moment, I think the main thing for me is being a dope black person is giving people opportunity, because the first, I think, 10 years of my career was focused on just me and trying to establish myself and make some money and, just the standard stuff, sort out your living and that sort of thing. Mm-hmm. But now, over the last 2 years, my attitude has shifted slightly. It's more like, how can I help someone, or how can I bust somebody who's really trying, but they can't actually get a break because they're not being, taken seriously, or they go to an interview and they don't have enough experience. So how can I actually help someone and actually put them on, if that makes sense? Sometimes that's all we need as black people, just a helping hand,
That's pretty dope. I would say that is definitely amazing. And I would say that there should be more people that are doing the same thing. And, at Dope Black Woman, that's exactly what we try to do, is make space for women to come together to support and help each other and build partnerships together. So that's amazing. And it's interesting that you said that, actually, because one of the things that Henry and Peter were just talking about is how the beard tricks people into thinking that they're older. And we were talking about, how old are you, Dominic, if you don't mind me asking?
I'm 33.
See what I'm saying? All of you look far too old for, and not in a bad way, but you just look mature. And I'm older than all of you, which is crazy.
I actually only got rid of my beard about 2 weeks ago.
Yeah,
and the fun thing is, I got rid of it so weird. I got rid of it because I was gonna meet with a client, and I always have this in my back of my head that the beard just makes me look too like mandem, and it's really bad that I think like this. It's really bad because apparently it's just in my own head and it's not true. But I just think when I'm meeting certain people or I'm doing certain things, the full-on beard is it's a bit much. I don't know what it is.
Well, this is one of the questions that the woman asked, actually. It was, do black men feel like they have to combat stereotypes that are commonly associated with the criminal justice system? And maybe all of you can talk a little bit about kind of the insecurities or the kind of imposter syndrome that you have as a result, or might or not have as a result of how you're perceived in the UK. And Dominic, maybe you want to start off, and then Henry and Peter, you can also answer the question.
Yeah, so I don't have much imposter syndrome at the moment with my work, because I've been a commercial manager and contract manager for like the last, at least last 7 years. So when it comes to like meeting with a C-suite exec from, I don't know, from an organization, let's say Capita, or I'm with the Ministry of Defense, right? Or any organization which I'm providing consultancy support to, I don't worry about explaining my work or, you know, just doing the day-to-day activities. But when I'm meeting new clients, or I'm interviewing for an opportunity and I'm pitching a proposal, for example, I generally still feel like, oh, they're expecting to see someone who's clean shaven, because the typical, maybe I shouldn't say it on this podcast, but the typical city person, right, or Caucasian male would usually come with like no facial hair.
Really? Okay.
Yeah, in my sector anyway. In law, it's like no facial hair, just typical, you know, suit and tie and just really clean shaven. So for me, when I'm going to certain meetings, because I already am like quite broad and quite stocky, I think the beard, I feel like sometimes it might intimidate them, right? Because I always say to my male friends that I don't look like, you know, like the JLS black guys, the soft, the soft kind of guys who look like, you know, friendly to like, they look really like refined and polished and just like, I don't know how to even describe it, to be honest with you, but if you look at this picture, JLS, right? you know, the band, right? The group.
Yeah.
Let me continue.
I don't feel like that. I feel like I'm too rugged.
No, you know who you remind me of? And I've, this is before even the podcast, this podcast. You remind me of the dude from Power.
Which Ghost? One? Ghost?
Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
That's who you remind
me of. You have a very chiseled face.
And I guess because I've seen you in suits as well, that's the thing. Like, so you remind me of the guy. I don't see as like, for me personally, I don't see as like, I don't match you with like any street or any urban or whatever you want to call it. When I see you, all I think about is a dude from Power.
Ghost.
What about when you're not in a corporate setting, when you're just like out touching road with the man them, with your brethren? Do you feel like there's a stereotype that's attached to you, and do you feel like you have to fight that stereotype?
Yeah, at times. I get pulled over quite a bit. So sometimes I feel like I have to prove that, you know, I'm well spoken, I'm, you know, I'm in an established career, I'm not just a, you know, a street you or you know, someone who's doing illegal activity. So I have to try and make it quite clear that, you know, like, you know, I'm like, you know, speaking English and, you know, good afternoon, officer, and, you know, how can I help you, that sort of thing. But I do feel like at times when I'm in just standard, like, you know, a tracksuit, for example, you are treated differently. But I to be honest with you, with that one, it's a tricky one, because I think even a Caucasian male might be treated differently, because, you know, your first impression counts, doesn't it? So if you go into, if you go into an off license, you know, and the perception of someone in a tracksuit is, oh, they either just come from the gym or they're just you know, in casual attire. But then someone immediately comes in a suit, you know, they look, you know, like they're you know, an important person or someone who is, you know, coming from a meeting or whatever the case might be. So I don't necessarily feel like I feel stereotyped automatically. But I think when certain people see you, the perception that you give off can come across at times like, oh, you know, I wonder what this person does. And I feel like in the UK, especially, you're guilty and then you're proved innocent.
Yeah. Mm.
If that makes sense. So you're...
I agree. The one thing I would say, though, for me, it's different for me, obviously, because I'm in the creative section. So I don't have, I can dress, and I to be honest, the more, I guess, weird I look, the better, you know. I think I think even for me, I might not even look as artistic as, I guess, the normal Joe, because I dress pretty straightforward. I mean, I think I would say I'm just a notch below, like, I guess, the guy who goes into work with a suit, his Friday attire would probably be what my regular thing is, right? So like, I mean, obviously this is a podcast, but you can see me, like, I dress like this all day, every day.
Henry is currently wearing a tam and a sweater.
Yeah. I mean, yeah. And I have the, like, I would wear like the turtleneck version of these. I mean, obviously not in the summer, but like, yeah. So for me, I don't have that issue. And especially, I don't know, it's been very interesting for me because I, you know, from Jamaica and everything and whatnot, like I acknowledge that obviously, you know, people look at you different just because of, you know, your skin tone and stuff. But like, that has never really been a major issue for me. I came here when I was 19, and I came here from a country that is predominantly Black. And I think how I looked at things, I guess, immediately as I realized how I looked at things compared to like kids, well, kids at the time, grew up here. I walk into the bank and the manager and the janitor are both Black. Whereas in a country like this, it's not particularly the same. So I kind of like, you know, and I have to understand that also, even in Jamaica, I kind of probably grew up a bit privileged as well. But at the same time, I never had an issue with how people were looking at me. I knew it happened, but it didn't change how I felt about how I was dressing or who I was or whatever. I just dressed how I felt personally, I felt good in. I mean, not to say that there are probably not other things that might have changed, but as it comes to like dress and my appearance, no, I just made sure I was clean and, you know, everything was like, yeah, I never really changed my clothes or anything like that because of it.
And Peter, what about you? Because you are in a different sector from both Dominic and Henry. So,
yeah.
And you grew up here.
So for me, when it comes to my pastoral work, obviously the way you dress is a representation not only to the ministry, but it's a way that people can feel comfortable. I have my audiences, so when I'm out in front of a larger crowd where it's predominantly the older generation, I tend to dress in a way where they can relate to me and not look at me as who's this, you know, young guy with lack of experience. My church that I attend is predominantly Africans. We my specific branch were very mixed, from Polish to the Caribbean to African to we're an international mission. So yeah, so when I'm in front of the younger crowd, I dress how I would normally. I'm a simple dude, man. Black tee, black jeans, black kicks. I keep it moving. That's it, just ready to go. I'm sort of ready for whatever the day has to hold for me. But when it's outside of that, so in my sales game or my entrepreneur side of things, I can get rid of what it is that you have. I don't have a market for it. I don't have a name for it. I just found a niche in it and I found that I was able to do it. I could talk well. So for example, if you had, say, a vintage Lamborghini, and it was worth, I don't know, $250,000, I could find you the buyer. That's basically what I do. I find if you want to sell something, you bring it my way and I get rid of it. Because of that, I can say from my experiences, I went to this guy's boat. He owned a wine vineyard and he wanted to buy some wine or whatever it was he was after. And I went there with my, I remember specifically I had a black hoodie on, my bomber jacket, black trousers, and my trainers. I was all black. That's kind of my thing. But anyway, so I went to this guy, I sat to him, I was speaking to him, and we're talking millions of pounds. We're talking, you know, they're up there, you know, and they never really treated me any different. I never felt out of place. I never felt any different, only because I knew what I was coming to do. And I knew what I was coming to say.
So I'm going to switch it just a little bit and go back to this dating concept. And it's interesting that you talked about being confident in yourself and owning the things that you do and who you are. Because one of the things that the woman asked about, there's a stereotype that men, particularly Caribbean men, so this is mm-hmm. more to you and to Dominic and Henry, but Peter, feel free to weigh in, that Caribbean men have an opposition to talking about oral sex and giving head. And so the question is it still a thing for Black men in the Caribbean to deny or reject the idea of giving women head?
I'll neither confirm nor deny.
No.
I'm joking. Like everything else, you just get older and everything just becomes pointless. So to really answer your question, no.
It's not still a thing.
Yeah, no, it's not still a thing.
So is that to say that you confirm that you enjoy and relish in giving head?
I don't see how that is.
Dominic, you need to defend your
client. No, but that wasn't the question. The question wasn't a personal thing. You asked if it's still a thing in the society, right? And I'm telling you, in society, no, it's not. It's not a thing that people are more open. I'm not saying that people still don't deny it.
Fair enough. So Dominic, where does this come from? Like, where did this thing about men not admitting to giving head, like, why is that a stereotype why is that a thing in Jamaica?
It's a mixture of, can you hear me?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Oh, it's a mixture of, based on my experience, I could say growing up, it's been influences from music, just the culture. I remember growing up and was it twins? Yeah, twins are twins. It was like, at school, I remember, you can't say, oh, Manchester, you ever say Galchester? You can't say, I'm going to check my Hotmail. Wife Hotmail? Like, I'm just checking my email. I'm like, oh, yeah, no Hotmail. Like, yeah. And then, like, I remember just, like, and then it was, like, I remember being in Cornwall, and I think, what was I doing again? I must have been drinking or something from my drink. And when you just come to me and it's like, oh, why are you straw? And I'm like, what do you mean? And it's like, yo, like.
It does get ridiculous.
I grew up and that was just the way of things. So it's like, no, you can't do this. It's just like a no. And as you get older, I remember being 21. I never had a woman ask me to go down on her or nothing like that. And then 25, didn't have anyone ask me again. And then the woman I was going out with at that time, she was really open and like, just she would want to go, you know, give head and stuff like that and go down on me. And then I started to think about it and I thought, well, the music's kind of changed now. What people were really against, some people are now open towards it. I remember even the musician saying a woman shouldn't be freaky. Then Vybz Kartel said, freaky gal of them, gal them in love.
Mm-hmm.
And then the trend just changed. So I was like, oh, is it that deep? And then I always said to myself, well, provided it's like my wifey, it's my woman, like, and I plan to like, you know, maybe get married to her, that sort of thing, then okay, maybe my mindset needs to change because I want to, you know, obviously please her. But if it's a situation where it's just any girl that you just pick up off, you know, from Revolution, hell no. But it's just like, I don't know where you've been, sort of thing. But if it's my personal woman, it's like, it's just me and her rocking, you know, we live together, we're an item, then I thought, I'm being silly here. Because I think a lot of it as well in Jamaica, it came from, that girl could be, you know, like, you know, Jamaican men are really sometimes a bit cocky. They're like, oh, we take where that boy they get. Like,
yeah.
So it's just like, oh, you're going down on someone who was sleeping with someone else last night. So it's like, yuck, sort of thing. But my mindset started to change as I grew up. Because I thought, well, my woman is with me 24/7. We live in the same house. We're engaged or we're married or whatever the case might be. Then maybe my mindset needs to change. Like, really?
Mm.
Is it that?
I think that,
you know.
Yeah, so. You're right. Look, I mean, just to sum it up, literally, I mean, as you get older, you start questioning things yourself. You know, you stop. Because before, yeah, you weren't questioning it. When you're younger, like,
it was just a thing. Yeah.
They told you the rule.
Yeah. And you follow it. Exactly. And the rule applies, Leanne. It's to everything, right? And I don't want to upset anyone, but I started to question a lot of things as I got older, and I'd be very careful what I say. So as I got older, I started to think, well, why do I support Arsenal? I support Arsenal because I was given the t-shirt of Ian Wright when I was young from my father.
Fair enough.
I thought to myself, why am I a Christian? Oh, my mom brought me to church for my kid. Why am I not Muslim? Why am I not supporting Liverpool? And I used to think, hang on a minute. I need to kind of find myself, because I'm only doing things based on what's being told of me from a kid sort of thing. You know, and it's the same way where you're told, go to school, get education, get a job. And then when you're mid-20s, it's like, oh, why are you not an entrepreneur? What? Start a business. And it's like, hang on a minute. I've spent all these years trying to work out how to get a career. And these are the rules to life. Now you're telling me I must, like, buy something from Alibaba and resell it and make profit. And I'm supposed to be an entrepreneur and create some big software and sell it and make millions overnight. Like, give me a chance. Like, I'm just starting to understand the rules of the world here. Do you know what I mean? So I don't want to upset anyone, but the whole, like, religion, once again, it's the same thing. And that, I know it's totally different from going down and oral sex, right? But it's just, it would, in Jamaica, it was just a rule. Like, it was a rule. Don't go down, Panagyal. And then it's, at home, it was a rule. Like, you must support Arsenal. It was a rule. You will be a Christian. Read your Bible. So it was just a rule. That's it. That's how, the only way I can explain it.
Do you still support Arsenal?
Yeah, I do. Okay. And so does my son. You see what I mean? And we're not doing great. But
have you ever?
In the 1970s.
Gunshot. But you know, but I can't change now, because it's like it's loyal and like it's no, you're not.
No, you can change. You choose not to. And I'm not throwing out. Like, You're right. I feel as if, like, and this is the whole question for me personally, it was just like, there's no rule to this thing called life, right? But yet there are people who, when you came into this world, told you that these are the rules, when there is no rules, right?
None.
And I mean, I feel like the quicker you just kind of figure that out and you start, like, looking for your own rule, because that's what they did. They found their own rule and they now impose that rule on you. Right?
Yeah. Facts.
Because you're right, like, it's same like the religion thing. Like, why am I so fortunate to be born in the right religion? Why was I so fortunate? There are millions of people who weren't fortunate, quote unquote, to be born in the right religion. Why am I so fortunate?
So I want to, again, go into another question. This is very interesting, and I didn't expect to get such a deep response from such a seemingly surface question, but it's true. Like, you know, your parents, your mom specifically, and it's funny because all three of you have spoken about having a deep sort of, or have referenced having deep influences from your mom, or deep influence from your moms, right? And one of the questions actually is, growing up, I'm sure all of you have done your dirt, as it were. You're all great, well-established, solid, good, solid men now. But in your past, I'm sure you've done some dirt. So how do you kind of discern treating a female or a woman poorly? Because I'm sure all of you have regrets in terms of how you've treated women at some point in time in your life, versus having this, like, overwhelming respect and love for your mother, who is also a woman. So how do you reconcile that for yourself? And Peter, if you start off, because I remember you saying you growing up seeing your mom not being treated well, right?
Yeah. You know, I like this question, because it's something that I feel like is not really addressed in terms of men. This is my opinion, that we men, once we reach that point of enlightenment, we kind of shine away from the fact that we did wrong, and automatically put ourselves on this ultimate pedestal and expect to be praised for who we've become today, especially in our relationships. Well, for me, that's what I found. But to say what you said, yeah, from my past, I treated women as they allowed me to. And this is me being totally transparent. A lot of the girls didn't really mind if I was to speak to someone else, or it's not that they didn't mind, but they did nothing to show me that they cared. So I did. And then obviously it became a cycle. And then before I know it, the ones that did care, I didn't care if they knew or they didn't know. And that vicious cycle continued for a while. And that obviously aided to me obviously not finding the one that I supposedly said that I was looking for. But the point that I would say where the realization hit for me is when I understood what the purpose of a woman is and what her role in a sense is. And I say this because the Bible explains that a woman is a helper. When Eve was made, she was made as a helper. And when you understand what a helper is, it means that that person has the solution or the answer, or they can guide you into the right place. And in society, from tradition, whatever culture, the woman is meant to stay at home, watch the kids, mind her business, X, Y, Z, blah, blah, blah. But then when you use a woman for who she is and her purpose and her value, you'll see that one, you'll get more out of her, and two, she'll feel fulfilled. She'll feel fulfilled in the sense of she's not just that piece or that pawn in your life that just comes to say that, oh, I've acquired a gal, and that's what it is. She's more than that. So when you understand that she's your helpmate, then you will realize that she's, again, like I said, she feels fulfilled, you feel fulfilled. And not only just that, the relationship moves in the direction it needs to move in. And this is what I think that in our community, not even in our community, I just feel that people need to understand that a woman is more than what she is, that the society has said. And the narrative of, well, some of the narratives that's been pushed out there that a woman can do what a man can do and X, Y, Z, I believe that that's dangerous narratives, in my opinion. I believe that you're setting up a woman for failure because a woman can't go out and do certain things that men can do because she's not built that way. But then when we push that narrative and people exercise it, we create the negative habits or the wrong traits where we find that in our society now, women are moving like men. Like, for example, Cardi B has a song that says, I don't know if it's Cardi B, one of those artists has a song that basically says, you sex him when you dip him. I refuse to use a profanity word, but you sex him when you dip him. And it's like, hold on, women never used to do that. Women, sex was such a intimate, powerful tool, and you know, it meant a lot to them. But now women are sexing like, whoa. And I thought that was men. I thought that's what men do, you know, in quotes. Like, I thought that was a man thing. But now it's like I said, it's gone left, because no one really understands the true purpose of a woman. And I feel like once we can get back to that place, we'll be able to get the most out of our women, and our women will feel a lot more fulfilled.
I feel compelled to respond to this.
What can't women do that men can do? I don't fully understand.
Yeah, so for me, the words that you're using are a little bit problematic for me because
okay.
I don't think that anybody, man or woman,
mm-hmm.
like to have reckless sex should not be a man thing, because to have reckless sex is not necessarily something that anybody should be doing,
yeah.
right? If you know, everybody should be having sex within the comfort of what they feel comfortable with. And the idea of a woman having a quote unquote purpose or being getting the most out of her objectifies her as a tool and I'm a human being with agency and the capacity to make my own decisions. So I don't want somebody to make the most out of me. I want somebody to love me as I am and to appreciate me as I am, whether that's flawed or otherwise. So, because I don't look at my male partner as something that I need to get out of him. I don't see him as a meal ticket. I don't see him as a as something that has a purpose for me to benefit from. I see him as somebody mm-hmm. who we are compatible, we get along, and I love him because of who he is. Dominic and Henry, I don't know if you want to weigh in on this.
As well. I get the opportunity to elaborate very, very, very small.
Yeah, sure. But just let me let Henry and Dominic.
No, I mean, to be honest, that's what I was going to ask. I was going to ask him to basically explain himself a bit more.
Okay. Well, Peter, go ahead.
Okay. So when I say, first of all, the use of a woman or her purpose, I'm talking from a biblical perspective. I'm talking from a set of laws that are biblical. So when a man was created and when a woman was created and the unction that was given for their union. Now, when I said that a woman, she's a helpmate and that's her purpose, the man has his purpose and he has his value that he brings to their union. For example, a man's job is to provide for the woman and make sure that she's kept safe. The Bible says that a man's role is to present the woman blameless and perfect before Christ. So in other words, his job is to help build and grow and edify and help her to be the best woman that she can be and everything that she wants to be. And that's what I mean, that's the angle in which that I'm coming from in terms of her purpose, in the sense of there's a role that's been designed and there's a system that's been designed from God that allows us to have the best of every situation, in any situation. That's where I was coming from. And in the sense of a woman can't do what a man can do. My wife is in the military. She's been in the military now for almost 10 years. And in the military, they have a very strong notion of, especially if you're a woman, if you're in here, you do what the lads do, you do what the men do. And over those 10 years, she's always come back to me and told me that there's certain things that women just can't do or are more strenuous to do or more difficult to do, and the men should take lead to assist or help them do. But you find that in the army, you're left in that position where you've got to do it, you know, whether you're a woman or not, you've got to do it. And that's what I mean by that's the angle which I'm talking from, where I've realized from her and the rest of her colleagues and the rest of her friends that it's the narrative of a man can do what a woman can do. It's in their eyes, overplayed. And when I heard their argument and I heard their reasons why, I realized that, hold on, you know what, it's true. What happened to chivalry and these sort of things? What happened to the role of the gentleman in the woman's life? Why is it that it's almost, again, the narrative is played that, I used the wrong example saying having sex, but the narrative of, if I could think of the top of my head, a woman can run a home by herself. Like a woman, she can do what she wants. I mean, not do what she wants. She can run a home by herself. She don't need no man. But then the dynamics of a home, you need a man to be in that home. You need a man to help raise your child. There are things that you won't be able to teach your daughter, even though you're a woman. The man will need to school her and let her know. Or her father will need to school her and let her know. Vice versa with your son. There are things that you can teach your son, but it's not everything that you can show him. And when we start thinking of, I can do what you can do, so I don't need you, which is where it sort of leads to, and it leads to the fact of, oh, I choose you because I want you, but if I don't need you, I'll let you go. When we start moving into that narrative, it becomes problematic because in certain areas, you need the opposite spouse, you need the man, or you need the woman. So that's where I was coming from.
Okay, so you believe in clear gender roles. That's what it sounds like to me.
When
you explain your wife in the army and not being able to keep up with certain strenuous activity like the men, what I'm inferring from that is what you're saying is, yes, a woman plays a supportive role in the household and is very important. And, you know, and as you just, you know, you finished off, your closing statement was that a little boy in the house or a little girl in the house needs both parents. But what you're trying to say is that what I'm taking from what you're saying, correct me if I'm wrong, is that a woman is like a helper, is like an assistant towards the man. Is that what you're saying?
See, and this is, all right, so
that's how it's I might have interpreted it wrong, but I was trying to.
Yeah. So purpose is the best way I can describe it, to probably put it into better context, is you have the head. And you have the neck. Without the neck, the head can't move, right? Mm-hmm. They're both equally as powerful, equally play level, play level. So that's basically what I'm saying, that a woman in the household, just because she's a helpmate, doesn't necessarily mean she's less than the man, weaker than the man, and she's more feeble than the man, or that's the only role that she can play. No. She assists. And just because she's the neck doesn't mean she's not important. This is the point I'm making. But society will drop the whole gender role sort of perspective and make it seem like you're picking at someone in a or a group of people in a specific kind of way when it's not that deep. Like, we were all designed for purpose.
I guess my question is, Peter, sorry, just a quick question is, why can't she be the head and you be the neck?
Gladly. I had to. That's not a problem. When my wife first met, she was the one bringing in the bread into the house. I was trying to start my business, and that happened for a good 3 years. She carried the bills. She looked after the home. She brought the family. After I started the business, I took over because that's what I wanted to do. So the purpose is, this is what I'm saying, that when we understand the purpose, you'll realize that no one is necessarily the head. But if you are describing it for people to understand, you will say the head, you'll say the neck, you'll say the tail. But no one's really the head. There's a time when you've got to fit the script and sometimes work it. That's the partnership. There's a time when you lean on your partner and your partner will lean on you. That's the whole purpose. But they're just, the angle that I've come with, I can understand it's just touchy and it's like, ooh, that's a bit, you're treading on, you know, deadly ground, which I get it. But then I've only broken it down only by a small percentage. And for me to go deeper, obviously would require a longer.
Yeah.
Can I ask a question?
Henry, go ahead. Yeah.
Yeah, man. So you spoke about, like, you know, living, you know, your full purpose, you know, being obviously, and now you're saying both persons can be the help. Somebody can be the head, somebody can be the neck. So are you saying that if that is not, and also personally me, I feel as if like most of the people that say that, oh, I don't need that person, and I'm guessing you're inferring to women, when women say, oh, I don't need a man, I feel like that is very small compared to the people who actually say that they need a man in their life, especially when it comes to raising a child. I don't think that is something where you have, when you have people who are single parents, that most of them are saying that they don't need somebody. I don't think that is the case, right? I do believe that the ones who are saying that, and I'm not saying that there isn't, but I don't think that they're, you can compare the people who are saying they would, because I know a lot of single women who, you know, that still want a man, that still want somebody.
That's from your perspective. And I know a lot of women that believe I don't need a man and I can do it myself.
Yeah, no, but compared to women who say that they need, you're saying that it's more.
I never said it's more. You said I said it's more. I'm just saying from the perspective of the women that say I don't need a man.
I mean, here's the thing. We're always going to have that. We're always going to have people who are going to believe that they don't need a person. And I get that. But what I'm trying to get at is, you said that you were grown by a single mom?
Yes, sir. That's correct.
Cool. So would you say that she didn't live her full potential?
In what sense?
In the sense of No.
If it's in just life, that's a separate matter. But I'm talking in the sense of a man and a woman, the union, the constitutional union that is between a man and a woman that God has designed. That's the perspective I'm talking about. Now, if we're talking that perspective, I don't feel my mum personally is fulfilled in herself at the time when she wasn't with anybody. At the time, because she's married now, but the time when she wasn't with anybody, there were things that she was going through and struggling with that if she had a man around, it wouldn't be the case. And that proved the point that the fact that when she got married, that those things that was the issue then are not the issue.
And what was she struggling with? What was she struggling with?
Just raising the kids, running the home in general, because she had to work as well. She had her job she had to do, so getting the kids ready, just the general movement of the house.
So like getting the kids, and so let's just say she had somebody to assist her who wasn't her partner, right? Would you say that mm-hmm. is something that could be, like, her parents could, you know, the kids would be raised properly? I mean, what I'm trying to get at is basically, I understand what you're saying, but I feel as if, like, we live in a world where nothing is hard, set, and fast, right? Like your mom's in a relationship now, but she had to do what she had to do. And especially when you showed the example of your wife being in the army, all of what you said was just on a physical matter. There is going to become a point where there are things that men physically can't do. And what they use is machine to compromise that, right? So I'm just trying to, like, the only example that I'm hearing for women can't do certain things is a physical thing. And that when, and I agree, because I have my own.
But giving advice to your child is not a physical thing. Giving advice to your child is, you talk, sorry.
Not a child, not a child. I'm just saying, when you use your wife as an example, you said that there are certain things that they can't do that surpass them. And but from the example that I'm
even down to the way they spoke, but I'm trying to touch on certain things that that I feel that are relevant to the point that I'm trying to sort of establish.
No, saying. Sorry, can I just say something?
Oh, go ahead, Dominic.
Before you speak, there's a few things here, right? And the conversation has kind of digressed slightly from the first question. But just to sum up what you guys are saying is this, right? So repeat a situation. I'm not gonna go into his personal situation or how he was raised, but when you say things like she may have not been fulfilled, I find that slightly unfair as well, because I'm coming from single parent household.
Where
for me, I think, well, my mom's done a decent job with me, and someone, there's a difference between companionship. There's a difference between a man, you know, your mom's now married and she has a husband now. Okay, great. She has a companion and she has support. But what I'm hearing is she couldn't have had that without a man. She could have had someone helping her out with the kids by an aunt, a cousin, a brother, a sister. And in terms of financial support, she could have had financial support from a friend, a brother, a cousin, a dad, or someone else. Doesn't necessarily have to be a man.
I agree
with the approach that a man, hear me out, because I'm a Christian, hear me out. So a man who finds a wife, number one, I completely agree, right? By favor of being the Lord. So it's not like I don't agree with the union of man and woman in a household, right? I in a household right now, my fiance is in the bedroom with my son, and I'm here in my office, right? So I completely agree, and I understand the benefits. So don't. I'm not trying to play devil's advocate or trying to catch you out or anything like that. But what I'm trying to say is, I think it can sound slightly unfair to women, right? I'm not saying this as well for Leanne, I'm a virgin, but it can sound a way, because I've watched a lot of women do it on their own single-handedly. And I also have a friend, a male friend, who is actually raising his son by himself because the mother isn't of sound mind. I'll leave it there, right? So I feel like it's possible, but it does come with challenges, right? Mm-hmm. And the other thing I heard you mention, or was it Henry mentioned, something like you hear women say, I don't need a man. You got to also dig deeper into that. A lot of that is just anger, frustration. Let down, just being let down by men. They don't necessarily mean that. There's a lot of women who say, I don't need a man. Men are dogs. All men are shit.
Yes.
Independent, Beyonce, all of that. Right. It's not true. Not all of it is true. So
agreed. But there are. This is the point I make, is that it is not true. You're correct.
It's not all true.
Of what they're going through. But there are those that genuinely, so you're telling me you haven't met nobody or no girl that genuinely believes she don't need a man.
Let me speak in at this point in time. Sorry, since I'm a woman, and I'm let me just say, I personally have never said I don't need a man, right? But I will agree with Dominic that many of the women who I know to say that is after several years of being consistently mistreated by men. And I genuinely don't know anyone who will say they don't need a man. They will say they can't deal with the trials and tribulations that come with dating someone, and it is much easier emotionally, sometimes financially,
just be by yourself,
physically, to be on your own until you find somebody who can be, as Dominic said, a companion.
Yeah.
And a companion just means, it doesn't mean that you have an obligation, a responsibility. It means that we share this life together by choice.
Yes.
And we've chosen to live this life together and figure it out, whatever that looks like, because this situation makes me happier. Mm-hmm. But yeah, sometimes it is easier to do things without a man. And I'm not saying, as Dominic said, there are always going to be challenges, but those challenges are sometimes easier than putting up with someone who's consistently going to cheat on you, consistently going to drop lick on you, consistently going to verbally.
I agree. This is what I'm saying to you. I agree 100%. If the person in your life is making your situation worse, and especially if you've got children involved, then yes, 100%, you lock them off and you ride it out and you do what you have to do, because that's what you need to do, 100%. But then, again, I'm only speaking from one narrative, one perspective. I haven't touched or bothered to even go into the other areas, but I'm speaking just from the perspective of the ones that run with it. There's women out there that run, I don't need a man, I'll do my thing, rest there, what I need a man for? And those are the ones that I'm sort of addressing, in a sense of, it's yes, you don't need a man, and yes, you could manage and do it well, but I use the children for the main reason in that aspect, because the child is the one that's going to end up lacking or missing something for the fact that you're saying, I don't need a man. And that's more of the, that's more of like the perspective I'm speaking from. But I agree. There's many reasons why women say that, and obviously to go into that would be a whole other subject. But I agree. Some women don't mean it, and there's some women out there that do mean it. And again, I can say this from the women, some of the women that I know that are on that narrative, and they've been on it for years, and they believe it. They don't need a man. They don't want a man. I'm saying, what about sex? What about this? They say, no, I don't really care. I'm doing my thing, and X, Y, Z. And I say, okay, cool. That's you. No problem. But there's a missing link. As a Christian man, there's a missing link when you do that. You're creating bigger or deeper issues for your child and for yourself. That's my...
Yeah, I agree. There is bigger issues, and there is consequences of not having a man or not having a woman in the household when raising kids. But where we are now, right, is women are earning more, right? Women are in senior positions at work. Women are getting promoted because not just because there's statistics in workplaces now that says need to have certain
but genuinely women. Being recognized.
But they're genuinely being recognized. So some women are making, you know, a lot of money, 100K, 150. And they think, well, I don't need a man because I can cover my mortgage, I can cover my bills, and take my child on a holiday.
That's one perspective.
That's one thing. And then if I don't want to deal with the stress or
perspective.
And whatever the case might be, right? And a man having a bag of women on you and embarrassing you. So you have those kind of women, but then you have some women who have just been scorned and they just can't deal with the mental challenges that it comes with or being disappointed again. And the same with men. It's not just one-sided. I've got
100%.
A male friend right now who's loves Kevin Samuels and he doesn't want a relationship. He literally just like, because there's a bear jokers out there just want to use me because I've got my big job. So it's both sides. Yes. But that's a big topic. So going back to Leanne's point about what has made our mindset change from maybe doing dirt in the past. I think that was your question, and we kind of just to answer your question, just conscious that I didn't answer it, and I don't think Henry answered as well, but just to answer, it's just once again time so gone from a place where, you know, you once again grow up, don't really know yourself, man, if you have enough gal and gal in a bongo, and you don't really respect I'll be honest with you, I never used to respect women. I used to just think, well, my mom's great and my sister's great, but there's a lot of women out here and they're not really good. Like, one minute I used to be a promoter from quite young, I used to put on parties, I'd be like, one minute I see you over here with my man, next minute I see you over here with my man. So I think, like, you're not serious. So I think, well, that's the energy and vibe you're giving off, so I'm going to match that. So I'm not going to take you serious because you don't come across as someone who is looking for commitment. So why would I do the most and wife you? I'm not going to do it. I'm not going to save you, right? And then be looked at as like an idiot. So for guys, Leanne, there's a few things that we have to deal with. Number one, we don't want to look silly. We don't want to be in the street with someone playing double six, being a poser with someone who is, you know, for the street, all right? And everyone knows her. Then number two, all right? You don't want to also, you want to protect yourself. You don't want to give your all to someone and get nothing in back. You don't want no return on investment. If you're going to invest in someone, you know, take her out, buy her flowers, make sure that you're considerate, buy thoughtful gifts, spend time with her, invest in her. You want to make sure you get something back. And if you're not, what you're going to do is say, you know what, I've learned from that last investment, it didn't pay off. So the next time arise, I meet someone, I'm going to just actually not take it so hard and not come on too strong and just like go with the flow. Now, another reason, so that's two reasons. Another reason why a man might not want to settle down or treat women like that is relationships come with cost. They come with maintenance, and it is not cheap to upkeep with a woman. And even though it's not transactional, and I hate making it sound like this, but when you're in a relationship, you have to deal with birthday presents, anniversaries, you have to deal with, and even if your woman isn't materialistic, you have to at least, like, I'm not saying she wants a Gucci bag, but she definitely would at least want to go Nando's on an anniversary or go out and do things. And then you got gifts, and then you've got Christmas, and then you've got all these different things. And then eventually it's holidays. And then maybe you might hear, oh, my friend is doing this, I would love to go on holiday too. And it's like, it's a lot to maintain and upkeep. So for a lot of guys, they continue with the dirt because it's easier just being a guy who, you know, you rent a flat, you rent out one room to your brethren, you live in one room, and you just chop and change every now and then. It's lower maintenance. Now, there is a debate. Some guys will say that it's actually more expensive dating than being in a relationship. I beg to differ, because when you're in a relationship, if you're actually investing and you're going towards marriage, it will lead to a mortgage, it will lead to a wedding. And let's say you just do a simple wedding and it costs you 5,000 or even 2,000, you do it at a registry office, then it comes with kids, then it comes with nursery fees are £900 minimum, it comes with a car, it comes with an expense. So for some guys, it is cheaper just dating,
cut and go through,
or even buying sex. It sounds so bad, but I know guys out there who just say, you know what, it's so transactional nowadays, I might as well just spend £500 and just go and get my enjoyment. So just to answer your question quickly, there's many reasons why guys do dirt. And a lot of women think it's just because they're good looking and they're opportunists, and it's so easy to get a girl nowadays because the ratio is crazy. There's more women.
Yeah, the ratio is mad.
It's mad. And women are actually directly saying, why, right? They're coming up to you and they're approaching you. And they're saying, you know what? Your woman has to share you sometimes. They're direct. They don't care. Some of them, they don't care. But it can move from being an opportunist to, you know what, that girl's just sexy and she's beautiful and I just one piece. It's different reasons. There's probably about 8 reasons, if not more, why guys, like, you know, do dirt. But then a lot of it, as I said, it comes down to time, because I know the same me, even last year, isn't the same me now. And the me 3 years ago, 5 years ago, I can't lie, like probably 5-7 years ago, I used to have 4 or 5 girls at the same time. Like, literally. And I'd leave one, and I would bathe at one, and I would, in my car, have a little rag, and like wipe myself, spray on a cologne, change my top, make sure there's no makeup on me, and all sorts. And then my phone's on flight mode, and then my battery, they have another phone, and it's just a lot. And it's, you're in bed, and the phone's on this mode, and it's like, you know what, this is,
you never get tired.
It's exhausting, I'm telling you. So there's many reasons, but once again, with time, your energy will start to go different places. And going back to what I mentioned earlier, I generally believe when a man finds a woman or a wife, he definitely, things change for him. Because I know some of my friends one of my friends is a Christian, he's big in church, his dad's a pastor, and he said that scripture to me once, and I was like, okay, bro. He said to me, a man who finds a wife finds favor in the Lord. And I've watched his income just increase. And not just that, his health as well. He used to always have health issues. Mm. And now, since he's been married, it's just like everything's going smooth for him. And I'll be honest with you, since I kind of like slowed down and just cut out certain things, my life is just as well. It started to just, like, you know, go much better for me than how it has been in the past. And I think a lot of that is to do with focus and where I'm putting my energy. Because if you're not focusing on juggling multiple and running outside to answer a phone and all of this, and you're actually just dealing with your woman, you and your mom, your family and your core friends who really got time for you, and then your work, there's nothing else to be focusing on. So yeah. Instead of running up and down, going here, there and everywhere, you're just focused on your goal, so you achieve more. And God also, I feel like God actually recognizes that you're trying and you're approaching things better as a person. I generally feel so. So that's just my view on the whole thing.
You know what's interesting is that what you've just said and what Peter just said are not wholly different, right?
I was just about to say the same thing.
It's quite literally the same thing.
The same thing.
It's the same thing. It's just the language. But quite literally, you both said pretty much the same. I don't know if you see similarities in what Dominic just said.
No, I do.
I mean, yeah, I can't top what Dom just said. But, and again, I just have to go back to almost giving the same answer to the question before. It's just the script that you were given. You come in it and you almost were just told that this is what you're supposed to be doing. You're supposed to be moving around. You're supposed to be playing the game. You know, like what Cartel said, trick them off.
Yeah.
Sorry, Pastor. Sorry. You see me? Cool, trick them at six then. You see me? So, and you were taught, and again, music, you know, culture,
influence.
You know,
yeah, influence,
patriarchy,
right?
If you want to put that in. Like, I mean, it's just, and it's not until you start getting older, yes, you get tired, but then you get really time to think for yourself, you know?
Yes,
you become an adult, you know, you start thinking of things, you know, you're around the same friends who you were with 10 years ago. The thought that we were making 10 years ago and the thought that we're making now, completely different. Completely different, you know? Yeah, you might have the one guy who's just always going to think
like
that. I'm not going to reach this until I'm probably 50. But like in general, most of the friends, and the only time that is not the case, probably you are that guy. But but I mean, most of the times, your language, the rules change. And the rules change because you change. And because your environment change, you know? And at the end of the day, yes, it was all great when I was like 16 and they were telling me that this was, and I was living off my mom's like spending money. Like, it was all good then. It was all good, but like, no, I literally have the same problems my mother have. Bills, rent, all you know?
So you have to spend wisely.
Exactly. Exactly. And I do agree.
It's expensive.
Yeah, it's expensive. It's expensive.
It's not a poor man's sport. It's a rich man's sport.
Yeah.
I'm telling you.
Interesting, guys. Interesting. Okay, so I'm going to wrap it up by asking everybody one last question, and we'll try to keep it as brief as humanly possible. No, what do you find most confusing about women?
See, I would answer, but I don't want to answer just in case I get attacked again. So I'm going to just look here. But I will answer, but after the man them answers, so I could be politically correct.
Peter, this is a safe space. You are not, no judgment whatsoever, right? And I think this is the purpose, is that the point is for us to be able to express ourselves as organically as possible. And to talk through that. And actually, in talking through what we've just talked through, we all came to a consensus, even though it was a little bit of a difficult road to get there, but we got there. So
I think I've only really dated black women, but for me, what I've experienced over dating and being in a relationship is a common theme. And women always act like, communication is key, and they're like the strongest communicator ever. But I find it confusing because every woman I dated hasn't been the best communicator.
True.
And true. What I mean by that, I'll give you examples, right? I've had a few of these situations where they will, you know, you come home, you've had a bad day at work, and a woman might be venting, right? So you have your dinner, and a woman could be venting to you, or talking. And I've learned recently, once again, yesterday's price is not today's price, Dominic, because last year I would if someone's venting to me, my mom, my sister, my woman, whatever, I would straight think of, oh, a solution. But sometimes women come in, they come at you and it's just, it's not even a solution they want. They just want to just vent and just like moan and like crack a bottle of Prosecco and just have some emotional support. And I used to think, I'm not like this. I don't want to just talk for talk's sake. Like, I don't want to talk until nine about the same, your boss. And I'm thinking, why don't you just get a new job? I'm like, all right, here what we have to do. We're going to go on Indeed.com, CW Jobs, and we're going to change. And we're gonna tweak your CV, and we're going to maybe get you another job, or we're going to go back to your old job where you were happy, but, you know, you didn't get the pay rise. Maybe they'll give you a pay rise now. But then you're told, no, I don't want to do that. I don't want to do that. Why are you telling me to do that? And I think, but you're moaning about something. I'm giving you a solution. So I used to find it confusing, not so much now, because now I will lead with, are you saying this because you want just emotional support? You want a reason with me? Yes. Or do you want to look for a solution so we can try and get you out of this problem? And it's the same thing, even if they're moaning about their female friends, or like, oh, she did this, or she said this, or what do you think about this? And I think, you really want my opinion? Or have you already made the opinion in your head and you want me to just agree with you? And it's the same thing with even food. It's like, all right, oh, should we have steak or sea bass? And it's like, what do you really fancy? Are you asking my opinion? Are you thinking, what's the easiest to cook right now? Like, what I find is confusing, women. Sometimes it's like, they already have the answer in their head and they just want you to repeat it. Or they just want to have just the emotional support or someone who they can have, like just a brethren who they can just reason with and just chat shit with. Kind of like the man who just chat shit, not look for an actual solution. They just want to have a bottle of Prosecco and just moan and just bitch about something, right? Sorry for the bad word, Pastor. But no,
say that this is what I did yesterday.
Fraxenheit, here you go. Yeah, the rosé one, and this is it. And that's expensive as well, that one, man. Bloody hell. But yeah, so you get me, Leanne. So
yeah.
I used to find that really confusing, but literally probably about 2020, I realized, oh, I need to stop. I need to kind of take accountability and think, don't just look for a solution and fix the problem, which is just the alpha man approach of, you know, there's a problem, let me give you a solution. Sometimes just be like, oh, really, baby? Oh, that really gone? John, oh, like, all right. Yo, and just like hype up the situation as well. You know what I mean? Like, it's Real Housewives of Atlanta or something. And then after that, I will go and do some man thing and just be like, okay, great, yeah. I've done my bit for society, time to go and, you know, go on the phone with the regimen and just, yeah.
Start off my peace of mind.
Yeah, but yeah, that's the most thing I've found confusing over the years.
That's a good one. Do you know what's funny is that every married woman that I know says the exact same thing about their husband, is that they will have the solution to a problem, but they almost have to trick their partners into believing that they came up with the idea themselves. It's very interesting. So I think a lot of these issues that we've discussed today, or a lot of things we've discussed today, are present in the other sex, but it's about finding the individual that provides the right balance for you. And for me, I try to date people that I feel fill the gaps that I have, and the failures that I have, and the flaws that I have, to provide that balance. So very interesting discussion, gentlemen. Thank you so much all for joining me. I really appreciate it. Everybody's perspective was extremely interesting and and valued. And we'll see how the women respond to this episode. I'm sure they'll have lots of opinions.
Thank you for your time. Really nice to meet you all. Peter, nice to meet, meet you all. Nice to meet you, Peter. And interesting conversation. And Henry, big up yourself. And Leanne, speak soon, yeah?
So thanks, guys, so much for joining me. Don't forget to share, listen, and subscribe to the podcast wherever you get your podcasts from. We will be back with you next week. Until then, stay blessed and unapologetically Black.
4 detention officers.
Suspect brought in, 2309.
3 custody sergeants.
Abrasions to the neck and left arm.
2 investigators. It's okay. We'll take care of this. And me, PC Sarpon, who responded to a call and arrested an abusive partner, ending years of emotional and physical abuse. Be one of the 20,000 new officers. Be part of the team. Be the difference. Join the police.